So welcome, and thank you for the opportunity to talk with you today. I'll be sharing with you our experience with the Colorado Generations Project. And I want to acknowledge from the outset that this is a public health service project, not research, but this is a service project that was funded by the Colorado Tobacco Tax Initiative through the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. And I have no financial disclosures. So we had three main goals for this project. The first was to increase identification of individuals with hereditary cancer syndromes, mainly those at risk for Lynch syndrome, for hereditary colon cancer, and also individuals at risk for hereditary breast and ovarian cancer. And we sought to do this primarily in a primary care population, but we also included individuals seen at oncology, several oncology clinics in the Denver metro area. We also sought to then, once we were able to identify folks, to make sure that they were referred for the proper services for cancer risk assessment and genetic testing if appropriate. And because we included in our clinic population those that served the uninsured, we wanted to be sure that we had monies to fund genetic testing for those individuals, and we were able to secure that through this service project. So just by way of background, the majority of cancers are sporadic in nature with no familial cause, about 70%. Another 20% of cancers we suspect have some familial component. And about 5 to 10% of cancers we know are due to inherited gene mutations. And for Lynch syndrome and hereditary breast and ovarian cancer, we can actually identify individuals that carry these gene mutations. And it's important to do this. Even though this represents a fairly small proportion of cancers, and maybe only 1% of the population are gene mutation carriers themselves, the risk for cancer for these individuals is significant. So for Lynch syndrome, individuals have a lifetime risk of about 80%, or upwards of 80%, I should say. And for hereditary breast individuals and families with hereditary breast and ovarian cancer, again, their risk for breast cancer could be as high as 80% compared to 12% population risk. And for ovarian cancer, upwards of about 50%. So very important to identify these individuals. But despite the fact that we know how, we have the technology to identify these individuals through genetic testing, and we know that it's important to do so, the utilization of genetic services, in particular cancer risk assessment and genetic testing, is underutilized here in Colorado, and we suspect that's true across the country as well. And there's likely many reasons for this. Two important reasons that we believe are happening is first of all, we're not really doing a very good job at identifying who these folks are. And secondly, providers, and in particular providers in primary care, are not necessarily well-versed in what hereditary cancer syndromes are, what to look for in families, what questions to ask in order to identify these individuals. So as I stated earlier, it's very important to identify these individuals, in part because there's things we can do for them. We can provide them with recommendations for screening to start screening earlier and with more intense screening. We can also recommend other options for medical management to reduce their risk of developing cancer as well as their family members. Currently, taking adequate family history is the most widely used mechanism in place now for identifying these families. But as some of the earlier speakers have alluded to, and we find as well, is that taking an adequate family history is not routinely done, certainly less so in primary care settings. So we had several objectives for our project. First of all, we sought to develop and implement a simple family history screening tool that could be implemented into primary care and oncology clinics. We also thought it was important, before implementing the tool, to educate the providers at these clinics. So we had several genetic counselors working on our projects that put together a presentation about hereditary cancer. And they did educational sessions at the clinics before implementing, thinking that if their patients filled out the form and had questions, that the providers then would be a little bit more educated on the tool itself and more prepared to answer their questions. Using the tool, then, we sought to identify patients at risk and facilitate their referral for cancer risk assessment and testing if appropriate. And as stated earlier, we knew that we had a population of underserved. So in addition to providing referrals for genetic testing, we also tried to assure that these patients were referred to two programs here that we have in Colorado, the Women's Wellness Connection, which is funded by the CDC to provide mammography and cervical cancer screening, and the colorectal cancer screening program. So here's a picture of our screening tool. How to work this. And our goal really was to keep it simple. We wanted something that could be seamlessly integrated into clinical practice, that the front office staff could hand out with the normal paperwork that one would get when you go to an office visit. We wanted it to be simple also for the patients to read and to complete. And importantly, we also wanted it to be easy to evaluate. Because our goal really was to be able to set this up and leave it with the clinics for them to carry on after the project was over. So the tool went through several iterations. Again, this was developed by genetic counselors here at the University of Colorado Hereditary Cancer Clinic, as well as counselors at the Rocky Mountain Cancer Centers. This is a picture of our final tool, and what we came up with was essentially anything in the yes box meant that the individual met criteria for referral for further evaluation. So the clinic staff handed these out, as I said, to their patients when they came in for a clinic visit. They were then collected and either faxed to our genetic counselors as part of the project, or they were batched and we picked them up on a regular basis. Once we had the tools in hand, these were reviewed by genetic counselors who essentially scored the patients as low risk or high risk. For low-risk patients, again, we decided that it was important to have physician feedback, a feedback loop to the providers. So the providers received a letter back saying, we reviewed your patient, they filled out this form, we gave them a copy of the form, and said, at this point in time, your patient is not at risk, although it's very important to collect family history over time because this could change. For the high-risk patients, they were sent a letter directly from our genetic counselors that said, you filled out this form, we gave them a copy of it. Based on this information, you and your family may be at increased risk for hereditary cancer, and we sent them an extended family history questionnaire. Excuse me. And based on the these were then reviewed by the genetic counselors again on our staff. And based on the information provided back, this is more extensive information beyond what the screener, the simple screening form could collect. If an individual was then determined to not be appropriate for counseling, again, they were sent a letter back indicating such, and the provider received a letter back as well. For those determined to be high risk, these individuals were contacted by our counselors and invited to come in for a genetic counseling appointment. In very few instances, we also collected type of insurance from these individuals. And for those patients for whom referral was needed, the counselors had to contact the providers and ask for a referral for service. But in most cases, surprisingly, they did not need to get that from the provider. So patients were invited to come in for cancer risk assessment. And for those deemed appropriate for testing, we referred them for genetic testing as well. The provider then was sent dictation on the genetic counseling session and testing results, if appropriate. So in the 18 months that we were operational, we screened over 10,000 patients, the majority of whom came from primary care settings, about 82%. The majority of patients screened were female. And in the primary care patients, they were a younger population and more diverse. About 60% of the primary care patients were under the age of 50, where only about 30% of the oncology patients were under 50 years of age. And with respect to ethnicity, the primary care, as I said, was a much more diverse population. 23% were Hispanic, 6% African American, and 2% Asian, where 82% of the oncology patients were non-Hispanic white. Among the primary care patients, the tool identified 13% of patients as being high risk, or appropriate for referral for cancer risk assessment in 22% of oncology patients. And this was not surprising that there was a big difference because these individuals are affected individuals. It was a little bit surprising that 13% of patients were identified as high risk. So among the 1,400 patients that we identified as high risk through our tool, the majority, 58%, were deemed at high risk for hereditary breast ovarian cancer, about 30% for Lynch syndrome, and about 13% for both. Of the 1,483, we were able to send follow-up family history questionnaires to about 950 patients. The gap between 1,483 and 958 is that our project, unfortunately, was because of state funding cuts, I should say. We had to stop the project early. But among those that we were able to identify and send out family history questionnaires, only 155 came back, so only 16%. And I highlight that here because we think this is really where the gap is, certainly with our project. Of the 155 returned, 150 were deemed appropriate for genetic counseling and referred. Of those, 81 individuals followed up with that appointment, so about half. And of those, about 48 or 68% received genetic testing. I don't have the exact numbers, but I think about 10 of those patients' testing was paid for by the project because they did not have insurance. So just to summarize, we were fairly pleased with the outcome of this project, and that is feasible. We found that it was feasible to screen for hereditary cancer in primary care and oncology clinics. The clinics were happy to participate. They wanted to do it. They were on board. The providers were on board as well. And patients were willing to fill it out. We were able to identify a significant percentage of patients as high risk that would warrant a referral for genetic counseling that essentially would have been missed had this project not been in place. But we also found that patients, but that just wasn't enough. The patients were not, even though we were able to identify patients, they were not willing to take that next step. When we contacted them and let them know that they were at risk and asked them to provide more information, very few people pursued that. And we also found that providers were receptive to the project. But interestingly, even though they really valued what we were doing and supported our work, they relied heavily on our project to facilitate their referrals, despite the fact that one of our goals was to get them to start doing it themselves. So the challenges, as we see it, is how to get patients to take that next step. How do we get them to follow through on with our project? Following through would be completing the family history questionnaire and returning that. And then for those deemed appropriate for counseling and referred, for them to actually follow up on that. The primary care population is different than oncology patients. These issues are probably very different for them. They are unsuspecting patients that come in for other reasons. They don't know about hereditary cancer syndromes, let alone the fact that they might be at risk. So it's a very challenging, in this population. As I said, our project was forced to close 10 months early, and what we had just embarked on was a survey to go back to these patients that we had identified at high risk who did not then follow through and ask them why. What would it have taken for you to come in? What information, or what was it that made you choose not to do follow-up? Was it the way you were approached? Was it who was approaching you? Would you have preferred your provider to approach you as opposed to the genetic counselors? We're really trying to get at what those barriers were. We also, at that time, we had intended for the last 10 months of our project to essentially start weaning the clinics from our presence in their clinics. So to get them to be able to not only screen their own patients, but to interpret what they found on those screening questionnaires, to identify high-risk patients on their own, and then to be able to facilitate referrals for their own patients. Because that's sort of the larger question that we came up with, that we see in the challenge out there, is how do we sustain this system in the absence of a service project that comes in? And we did a fair amount of hand-holding, and we really did not have an opportunity to really, as I said, try to wean the clinics and see if they could actually operate on their own. And how do we sustain a system for again, continuing collection of family history, facilitating referrals, and perhaps the most challenging, providing genetic services to the uninsured, which really was a unique, those services are not, those resources are not out there, at least not here in Colorado. So we felt very good about being able to do that, but it's very, if one's going to go out and assess family history and identify people at high risk, this will come up, because it's not, one would say there's an ethical question there as to whether we ought to identify people for whom we really cannot then follow through and provide services. So I just want to acknowledge our, this is a highly collaborative project, our clinic partners, clinics with the Denver Oncology Consortium. These are primary care clinics, the State Network of Colorado Ambulatory Practices, that's out of the University of Colorado, and again, the University of Colorado Cancer Center, our genetic counselors that were instrumental in for this project, and our physician partners as well. Thank you. Yes.
Is the tool that you use widely available, or is it just something you developed for your project?
It was just something that we developed for our project. We would be happy to share it. Okay, I'll try to remember what those were. So the first question you had was about whether age affected uptake, if that's correct. And I don't have the numbers on what percentage of people that did that followed through. I don't know offhand what the age distribution is for that. So one could speculate that maybe the younger population is harder to reach and less likely to have time. That's sort of what we find with some of my other projects. You're thinking the opposite, that older people are less likely to do that. I don't know. And that would have been an interesting thing to look at when we did our surveys to try to figure out if we could better characterize the population that did choose to come in and choose to pursue further counseling and those that did not. Your second question, this is awful, I'm going to forget. Well, we certainly tried to engage them, and for the most part, as I said, they were very supportive of this project. The people we interacted with most were probably the front office staff, because they were the ones that had to put the form in the packet and give it to the patient and get it back. They too went to the educational sessions in case they had to field any questions that we felt that they were that they could answer. When we started. Our goal as we kind of entered into our third year was to provide them everything they needed, including the forms, education about how to score them, and a list of, and then sort of a step-by-step process of how to refer patients, who to call, is insurance required, et cetera. So I think we were getting there, and I think you make a really good point that nurses and PAs and other clinic staff could have been really valuable, and maybe that's our next step, is that we try to sort of figure out who within the clinic is going to help sustain a system for doing this. Your third question. Sorry, my memory is horrible, so.
I'm hoping we have a little time at the end.
Thank you.